So good evening and welcome to visitors. And happy to be here in this chilly hall together. So I'm bringing in this evening the koan that I offered to our graduates last week. As I've found myself continuing to spend time with it this week and really wondering some things about it. So I'd like to offer a couple of field notes and also more time for us to bring it in and go in and out of meditation a little bit, and chance for you to just speak into the space what comes for you as we do that. Because it felt like I just kind of dropped it in last week. And I'm like, oh, really? What? So I presented it as the gift that you already have, the three treasures in which we take refuge as people walking the Buddha way, the way of awakening as life, of life as awakening. And in our tradition, the Bodhisattva way, that is rooted in our vow to awaken with and as and for all beings. The three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, awakening, the way, and our companions. If this koan then is an expression of the treasure that we find right here under our feet, already present in this very life, the one I have. As one old teacher said to his friend, don't you know that the family treasure doesn't come in by the front gate? If this is what we already have, then how do we receive it? Yeah? How do we receive this gift and bring it forth when and as we need it? Another koan says, the storehouse of treasures opens of itself. You may take them and use them any way you wish. Huh. How? How is this so, if it is so? How is some ancient person's expression ours? And how is it refuge? And if we live a life of vow, of this vow, to take refuge here, always, here, to make this our heart's home, and to offer it, what sort of a life is that? Or put another way, what is refuge that's available at every single step, from the brisk skipping step of a happy spring morning to the heavy grieving step of a news-laden evening? I wonder if this isn't Ba Ling's own expression, his response to this very question. So for myself, I've noticed in recent years, in my dreams, as well as in my waking hours, which have certainly a dreamlike quality too sometimes, a strong sense of traveling, of having left a home that isn't mine anymore, and needing to find home right here where I am. And along with this, a deepening gratitude for the here that is home. right here in the mystery. This here that can't be held, what holds it? And this seems also so much a season of beginnings and departures, you know, of sweet, sweet currant blossoms and lilacs, graduations and travels. So this con seems to me so much to explore that core question. What and where is refuge in the journey that is already the destination? So let's move in and out a little bit of meditation with this koan to explore this old Zen person's response to, I think, three questions about refuge. One is, where is freedom? How can I find equanimity in this crazy ride we call a life? And how can I actually help effectively with the daunting challenges of my time? Of this time. So we'll start with the story. Long ago and far away in China, almost 1500 years ago, really long ago, a Chan student was leaving his teacher and going off to wander before settling down to teach. He wanted to show deepest gratitude to the teacher by expressing as best he could what he was taking with him, and said these three things. His gratitude for these to take on the road. So I'll speak the question and his response, and then we'll have a little silence, and then into that silence, just speak in a few words what comes for you. And the invitation is really to Zen is from jhana, which means absorption. And with an image like these, you can both absorb it and be absorbed within it. You can see what that's like. See what comes. What is Zen? What is awakening right now, the one that's here? What's the very nature of this right now? Baling said, snow in a silver bowl. A silver bowl filled with snow. So now here's the second thing our friend Baling asked and said. What is the way? The clear-eyed person falls into a well. What is the way? The clear-eyed person, the clear-eyed bodhisattva, falls into a well. So let's hang with the third one for a little while. So what is the sword so sharp that it cuts a hair that blows against it? The blown hair sword, it's called. What is a sword so sharp that it cuts a hair that blows against it? His response, each branch of coral holds up the moon. I thought I needed a sword, but I have an ocean. Any one more thing about that one? Okay. Thank you all for doing that. And we have a little bit more time, so I'd like to read you a quote, and I wish I had hot tea to pass around. So a couple of things, a quote and a couple of things that I noticed just by way of field notes, as I said, and then I'd like to just kind of hear about how this is for you. And the quote actually comes from Rebecca Solnit. She says, hope locates itself in the premises that we don't know what will happen, and that in the spaciousness of uncertainty is room to act. When you recognize uncertainty, you recognize that you may be able to influence the outcomes. You alone, or you in concert with a few dozen or several million others. Hope is an embrace of the unknown and the unknowable, an alternative to the certainty of both optimists and pessimists. Optimists think it will all be fine without our involvement. Pessimists take the opposite position. Both excuse themselves from acting. It's the belief that what we do matters, even though how and when it may matter, who and what it may impact are not things we can know beforehand. We may not, in fact, know them afterward either, but they matter all the same. Echoing what some of you were saying. And a couple of observations about how I think these might, how I notice them working in me, how they might work in us. And one is that that you've heard us say this before in this hall, but Baling doesn't say it means this. Mm-hmm. He says it's like this. And do you notice how much easier that is to hold? You know, a sense of it's like this, rather than some grand ideas about how it is. And about practicing this way, you know, with both in the koan way, practicing with stories, with images like this, but also just practicing, because you might have noticed that first one, snow in a silver bowl, feels kind of more like a concentration practice in a way. It's an image you can drop all the way deep into your breathing and let it just be there and let it be everything for a little while. I could feel that in the responses that you were making. And how the second one, clear-eyed bodhisattva falls into a well, feels kind of like mindfulness practice, like an openness of heart and mind, willingness to get out there and go and fall and go and fall, and noticing that in the falling is the well. And so that one feeling more like a, this is how we go, this is how we walk. Like often in the sutras, if somebody asks the Buddha, how should somebody who wants to be a bodhisattva sit and stand and walk and lie down? You know, how do we go? That kind of question. And the third one, having the quality of what about obstacles? What will help? What will cut through obstacles? And that idea that something can be fixed, then being met with, each branch of coral holds up the moon. And can you feel Buddha, Dharma, Sangha in those three as well? So the sense of you have what you need. And when you, what happens when you practice like this? What happens when you practice with these? And what I've been noticing is that over time as I practice, two things happen. And one of them is I notice more and more that I can trust it, that I can come home to it. And the second is, and there are interesting partners, the second is that I can more and more rest in and be nourished by the mystery, by the dark, by what I don't know, by the uncertainty itself. So in a way, there's sort of, as we practice, there's more a sense of a light in the way of, oh yeah, I can have confidence in this, and dark in which it's okay that I have no confidence at all, that there's uncertainty. So those were just things that I noticed. And so